Inside Scoop 5. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Sandy Nathan. She is the author of several books, but the one we're going to be talking about today is titled The Angel and the Brown-Eyed Boy. The story is a product of her grief, seeped through her unconscious after the death of her brother. The underlying theme is the United States and the world as the planet approaches meltdown. Although fiction takes place at the end of the 22nd century, it really makes me wonder, is this the reality of the future? Sandy has won multiple awards for her four books. She holds two master's degrees, and we're going to talk about them just a little bit later. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Irene.
Well, it's great to talk to you again, and I'm just really interested in this particular book because your backstory is really interesting and how you really got to write this, and I think it's kind of important we're going to start there. So give our listening audience just a little insight into why you wrote this book and how it came to you.
Okay. Well, it was just really a big surprise. I wasn't working on it. I had no plans to write it. I had no ideas for it, nothing. My brother died really suddenly and tragically about 3 years ago. And he was my little adorable brother. I loved him. And so it was real hard, and I was grieving. And, you know, I'd be going through my day, and everything seemed normal. But one night I had a dream, and in this dream, the figure of an angel, it didn't look like an angel, you know, like on the bird baths. It was like a being of light came to me, and it was like floating above me, and it was absolutely gorgeous. It was spellbinding. It was, you know, intoxicating. It was everything you'd expect an angel to be. And this thing, whatever it was, started settling in, and it finally merged with me. So I got to feel what it felt like to be totally good and to be in this state. And when I woke up, I still had that feeling. So that was, it was really cool, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually faded, and I went back to myself, you know, but still I had the experience. And then over the next maybe 3 or 4 days, the whole book just came boom out of my brain. Pretty much written. I wrote the whole book in about 5 weeks. Right after the dream, and then I spent about a year and a half with editing and proofreading and all of that stuff. So anyway, so that's the angel.
So and I just want to stop there, and we'll talk about the brown-eyed boy later, but when you talk about angel, now, have you done any research as to what this really may have been? You're calling it an angel.
Felt like an angel. No, I haven't really researched it. You know, I know there's a tremendous amount of stuff written about angels, and a lot of people, really believe in angels, and I guess I believe in angels too, but they've just never come to me like that, you know, so clearly. And
is it possible that this may have been your brother?
It didn't feel like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't feel like him. Yeah, the sadness and the murkiness and just a lot of history wasn't there. I mean, unless you know, wherever he went when he passed on, mm-hmm. you know, all of that was removed. It didn't feel like him. It felt female.
Okay.
Felt female.
Interesting. And so let's go further then. The brown-eyed boy, how did he come into this?
The two main characters of the book are the angel, who in the book is transformed into this being from outer space who comes to the Earth to try and save her planet. And she is the angel. She's totally good, totally angelic, totally wishes everyone good, you know. And she is supposed to find a boy. And her instructions say she's supposed to find the golden boy. Well, the brown-eyed boy is the golden boy, and he's a young man. He's a technology genius. He's at the time of this, the book is set, which is set in the future. It's set at by the late 22nd century, so it's like 2197, something like that, a long time from now. At that time, in the society that I made up, technology is illegal. So the boy, Jeremy, lives in the basement of his very fancy high school, which is sort of taken after the New York School for the Performing Arts. That was my unconscious was just steaming on this thing, bringing in all sorts of things. anyway, so he's sort of her counterpart. You know, he's brooding. He's had a terrible past. His family is probably the most dysfunctional in the history of the universe. He's very wealthy. He's the heir to a fortune. And he's this computer genius that's basically single-handedly resurrected the Internet, which is illegal. So it's a counterplay between the two of them. He is also a very good person, but he's a very tortured person.
Sandy, you mentioned that just a few seconds ago that you wrote this from your unconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's just talk about that and tell our listening audience what you mean by writing from the unconscious mind.
Oh, well, it wasn't like, I think that actually, you know, I think that all writers of fiction do write from their unconscious mind. You know, that's where the ideas come from. At least that's certainly true for me. You know, I've never sat down and said, I'm going to write this really long novel about Native Americans and the richest man in the world. That's my first novel. So it came out of my depths, and there were all these currents that were floating around, you know, that I didn't even know about, you know, really clearly, like this angel coming up and this whole society that came out of there. I mean, it's this horrible place that the world that I created is sort of like 1984 or the movie The City of Man. It's sort of like that. I mean, it's a police state. People don't have any freedom. They can disappear off the streets, out of their houses. There's camps all over where people are locked up. There's this war going on that the government denies, but at the same time it's going on. So it's really a very fearful place. Now, where that came from, that must be my deep, deep unconscious. I'm an economist, so I have two master's degrees. I have one in counseling and I have one in economics. And I worked for many years in Silicon Valley as an economist. So I think that while part of me, when this book was kind of forced out of me, part of me was really worried about my brother and sad about my brother. You know, the other part was going, oh my God, the economy is like a mess. And so it's sort of the economist in me fast forwarding to the year 2197, if the Great Recession doesn't get any better. And I think that so my concern about that is where this world came from. You know, I mean, we are in the worst economic meltdown that we've had since the 1930s. And it's not getting much better. You'll see the figures. There's a little bobble up. It looks like it's okay. And then we go back down. And, you know, whole industries have been destroyed. The housing industry is just a shambles. The financial industry is a shambles. The banks have money, but they're not lending it. The interest rate is cruising around zero, and nobody's investing. I mean, they're supposed to start investing. So theoretically, you know, the stimulus package didn't do what we wanted it to. You know, for an economist, I mean, this is very upsetting. So I think that, you know, some part of me was trying to say to my readers and to the world, you know, look what could happen if we don't work together and fix this. So,
as an economist, and of course your interest in this, what are your thoughts about fixing this?
Well, that's a real rough one. That's a real rough one. You know, there's like my overall underlying thought is we need to act like grown-ups, and we need to give up blaming each other for things not happening. You know, what happened to our society was massive. I mean, we had meltdowns in the financial system. That's huge. I mean, the roots of this are like 20, 30, 40 years old. You know, so we can't fix it right away. We need to realize that. But I think that we, you know, here's the counselor too. You know, I mean, we need to work together as a society to realize that we're really in trouble. And it's not just us. It's also Europe is having, you know, some terrible issues. Africa, you know, continually has issues. We have North Korea. You know, there's a lot of things going on that we really need to act like grown-ups and give up the my party says this or my party says that. We need to support our leaders. We need to elect leaders that we want. There's a lot of things we need to do. I think the least effective thing is finger-pointing and blaming.
Well, that just doesn't work in any way.
Yeah.
you know, it doesn't, it starts right from, let's say, the you know, family, the core family, you know, mom, dad, children, or whatever, you know, the parents and the children, that's where it really starts too, doesn't it?
Yeah,
yeah. And then, of course, you know, it's almost like an imprint. And you know, look at some of the finger pointing that goes on. And like you, you know, the counselor in me is thinking, wow, what really is the base of this? What really was going on in this person's childhood?
Mm-hmm.
And going back to that, and, you know, there they are reacting from whatever their imprint is.
Yes, yeah, and you kind of think that maybe they had a lot of blame put on them, too, and a
mm-hmm.
lot of judgment and that sort of thing.
So how do you think that this can shift?
How can this shift?
Yeah, how can
this
shift?
This is a big question.
We need to do this and we need to do that. We need to do that. But, you know, right now it's you and me and a few listeners.
Yeah. Well,
so, but we're now we're talking global.
Yeah.
Where does this start? How does it go?
I don't know. There's apparently a documentary out, and it's called Inside Job, and it was done by, I think, an MIT PhD, and it looked at the core of the meltdown in the financial markets and how basically Wall Street did it to itself. And as a society, it's a really big question. You know, all I can say is, as a person, you know, my intention is to act completely from integrity.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, of course, I'm not a Wall Street trader, so, you know, my impact, you know, you might want to, maybe this message could go to the Wall Street traders and say, you know, don't do this stuff you were doing. That's really bad. I don't know. It's sort of a basic values thing, like, and it has to be applied in a person's life, and I think it has to be applied individually. Greed, you know. I recently read a study of medical care, and it was a fellow who had a terrible medical problem, and he, you know, went to his doctor here in the United States and, you know, got one opinion of it, and it was going to cost so much, and then he went around to the whole world. He went to seven different major countries, and he went to doctors and got their opinion as to what he was going to, what it was going to cost to fix it and how much. And the finding with the statistics is that we have, like, the most expensive and not very good medical system in the world. The data that he had indicated that it was the insurance companies that were taking the biggest chunk, the biggest bite out of this. But I guess, you know, I could say to the insurance companies, hey, look at this, you know, do right.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a religious question or a values question, really. And you wonder the impact that an individual can have, and I think that's through voting, and that's just through every word that you say to everybody in your life. You know, that's as simple as it is. I sure hope we can turn it around, because if we don't, we have the angel on the brown and white.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Well, today I'm talking with author Sandy Nathan. She's the author of The Angel and the Brown-Eyed Boy. Interesting, isn't it? And I'm thinking, what if? What if things don't change in our society now? What will happen? Hey, who knows? But stay tuned, because we will be addressing these issues with Sandy. And, hey, by the way, Sandy's website is sandynathan.com.
That was based on on purely on history. Like some part of my mind was going, well, what happens if we don't turn it around? You know, what can happen?
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, in the year 2097, which is, I think, 87 years from now, something like that, or 86, there's a huge revolution where the president of Russia at that time stages a coup, declares himself the czar, declares the country an empire like it was before, and then goes on a rampage and almost takes over the world. That's pretty extreme, but, you know, it's really not so extreme because in the 1930s, the Great Depression of the 30s saw the same thing happen. I mean, it's not that far away from what's happened. The economic distress that people felt in the Great Depression, especially in Germany, which was paying reparations for World War I through the Treaty of Versailles, they were just crushed. They were crushed, and out of this economic distress came Adolf Hitler. You know, that allowed this kind of foment and the pain that the people were feeling, you know, allowed a totalitarian monster to arise and allowed the Nazi Party, and then they went and took over the world. So what I write in the book actually is directly based on history. It's like, could this happen again? Maybe. You know, maybe.
You never knew. It could.
Yeah, it could. I mean, you just don't know. I don't know how we're going to get out of this recession. I really don't. But if we don't, some really serious things could happen.
But it almost seems cyclical, too, because, you know, we did get out of the Great Depression.
Yeah, yeah.
And things were...
But it was actually probably World War II that did it, the spending of World War II, a massive influx. You know, FDR had all the programs that he did to increase spending, and what the Civilian Conservation Corps, I don't remember, the WPA, he had all of those huge projects going, but they weren't enough. They weren't enough to overcome the fear that people had for spending and the feeling that they needed to hold on to everything. So World War II pushed us out of that, you know. We've already got a war going now.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do.
It's pretty bleak. So I think that's why, yeah, when this book popped out of me, you know, this is the sort of stuff that was going through my mind. The book has a whole bunch of really funny characters in it. I mean, it's not all gloom and doom, and it has this beautiful angel, but it has like I love the President of the United States in the book. His name is Lincoln Charles, and he's sort of like the human potential president. And he gets on the TV 3 times a day and tells people to exercise and think positive thoughts, you know. And I think that's me laughing at sort of how are we going to get out of this recession? Is that going to do it? You know, exercise and positive thinking. I don't know. He's a funny character, and there's a lot of other characters in it too.
In your book, you address nuclear Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that's possible now in our lifetime that could happen?
You know, I don't know. The research that I've done on nuclear war says that it's more likely going to be, there was a term for it, was basically nut jobs.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's somebody like South Korea or somebody else that was somewhere else that's like, you know, in the 2-year-old range of psychological maturity who gets a hold of a bomb, you know. I don't think in the book it's a total meltdown of everything. I mean, so that everything is destroyed. That wouldn't happen. So we may have something horrible, you know, crop up from one of these, I don't know what you call them, one of these states that are sort of nutcase states. Anyway,
well,
no disrespect meant to the people of those states, but we might see something like that. But I don't think, even in the research that I did on nuclear war, the old-style bombs, which were the really huge bombs where you'd drop them and the whole city would be leveled, that's the 1940s, 50s-style bombs.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that the new nuclear war would be a whole bunch of smaller bombs going off around a city, so it kills all the people, but it leaves the buildings.
Yeah.
And so there, that would be a different scenario. So, and I don't know, the Defense Department hasn't told me exactly what they're doing these days.
Oh, you mean you don't have your in?
No, they haven't told me. So, you know, but mine, you know, I'm making a point, you know, because the whole thing was, what I'm basically saying is, hey, folks, you know, let's take a look at what's going on and fix it so that before we blow the whole planet up. And you know, there it is. And over that, there's a love story, and mm-hmm. there's some really wild characters that are really a lot of fun.
What are your thoughts on the recent shootings at Tucson?
I think it's awful. You know, I think it's really, really horrible. That drawing that, or whatever it was, what image it was that was associated with Sarah Palin, where she has this congresswoman in the sights of a gun. I mean, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. I think is just horrible.
Why do you think this is happening? What's going on?
Well, you know, maybe it's a lot of people feeling what I've been talking about, mm-hmm. you know, and their response is to take a gun and go start shooting. Instead of saying, hey, we're a society, you know, how are we going to handle this? It's like, I'm just going to go shoot so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And again, very, very painful. Painful to those involved who get killed, and, you know, painful to witness as a member of society.
And yet there's always, you know, there's that belief that there's always something good that comes out of something bad. You know, there's a lot of talk right now. And, for instance, you know, when the president had his speech the other day, I think from that came that the different parties were not separated. They were sitting together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, for me, it was heartwarming to see that many of the people there were wearing the ribbons, the black and white ribbons.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there was a lot of respect.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like we need a really large wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
My view of the universe would be everybody would be the angel, and we'd all be sweet, and nobody would do anything bad, and everything would be nice and all that. And, you know, it's just sort of not how we are.
That would be ideal, wouldn't it?
What?
That would be really ideal, wouldn't it?
It would be really swell.
Yes, it would.
It would be really swell, just nice, nice, nice all the time. But it isn't how we are. So some people are like that. You know, I mean, I think that there are religious leaders and there are meditation masters and there are mm-hmm. really developed people that are like that, you know, or pretty close. But a lot of us aren't.
So what do you think is going to happen in 2012?
2012.
The big shift. The big shift.
Huh.
The Mayan calendar, the end of it. How do you feel about that? You know? What do you think?
I always remember the year 2000.
Uh-huh.
You know, when everybody was expecting. Well, it was 2000 or 2001, whichever one.
Right.
I guess it was 2000 when everybody was expecting a core meltdown.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and nothing happened. It was like absolutely nothing happened. So I'm expecting nothing to happen, actually. You know, I'll be surprised if something does.
Don't know. Sandy, but give your listening audience your website address where they can go and find out more about you and more about your book that we're talking about today, The Angel and the Brown-Eyed Boy.
Well, my website is Sandy, S-A-N-D-Y, Nathan, NathanN.com, and you can find information on it there. It also has its own blog. So The Angel and the Brown-Eyed Boy, actually, I got not just one book, but I now have three that I have written in draft form, and I'm actually coming along real fast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a series. So the series is Tales from Earth's End.
Mm-hmm.
.com, and that will take you to the blog of the series.
Great.
Yeah. There's the first chapter on it, and there's a lot of stuff on it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Sandy. This has been a really interesting conversation, and I'm really pleased to be able to talk to you again and going into a direction of where we did, you know, talking about the economy, talking about what's really going on in the world, and just really getting down to the fact that we need some changes.
Yeah, we as a people need to pull together and fix this thing.
Right, and, you know, but it can start with one, ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and allow that to just, you know, reflect onto others.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Thanks, Sandy.
Okay.
There you go, listeners. Wasn't that an interesting conversation? And as you know, we were talking with Sandy Nathan, the author of The Angel and the Brown-Eyed Boy. And you can check her out again on sandynathan.com. Thanks for listening. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.